back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast of the Past, a podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom. Actually, Josh, can I do a take of the opening where I talk like the main character of this game?
Oh, yeah.
Eternal salutations to you, the grand viewer of Cast of the Past, a podcast. My podcast. My podcast where interdimensionally bound friends discuss video game titles in a light that has not been discussed previously by the words of man. The words of man.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
He really started to piss me off. But speaking of the game, what was I just referencing, Josh?
Today we are talking about the 1993 hit Myst.
That's hit with a capital H, Josh. This is a gargantuan game in the history of computer games. I think that's what they're called.
Yes, this game, strangely enough, a Apple PC game?
Well, is it still a PC if it's Apple? Because PC just stands for personal computer, but I feel like PC gets thrown at non-Mac machines.
Well, that's a Windows-based machine.
I need Justin Long to come in here and tell me the difference.
But yes, today we are talking about Myst, the crazy puzzle game that is huge. It's huge, but at the same time caused a lot of controversy in the point and click world of PC games back in the day.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of opinions about this game, and we're going to get into it. But first and foremost, we have to thank good friend Frank, who has been supporting the show in any way they can for a while, including when they donated to our Extra Life charity stream last fall and requested this episode as part of their perk. So, Frank, thanks to your generosity for helping the big, beautiful kids of the world, you get this episode, and we hope you enjoy it.
So is this going to be like when we did Boy in a Blob and we just tore it apart?
I mean, the person who requested Boy in his Blob went on to admit that they knew it was a bad game and they just were trying to feed it to us. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Frank is doing this in better faith, you know.
There's a lot of history here.
Yeah.
A lot of history.
Most of my notes, I have very few, I'm not going to lie, I don't have a ton of notes about this game in terms of the story. It's interesting, and we'll talk about it, but I've got a ton about, like, this game's development and its impact and legacy, because I think those are some of the meatier things for us to get into tonight. Yeah.
But we can't talk about this game without the nitty and the gritty.
It's true. So get your red and blue books, because we are about to give you dat nitty gritty. Myst was released on September 24th, 1993. Ooh. On Mac. But beyond that, it was later ported to tons of platforms. Now, it was very quickly released on Windows, and then in the ensuing years on the Sega Saturn, the Atari Jaguar, the PlayStation, eventually on the Nintendo DS and 3DS, which are apparently terrible ports, and ultimately in the modern day, it is now seeing release on VR platforms such as the Oculus. It was developed by Cyan, which is now known as Cyan Worlds. It was a studio founded by Myst creators Robin and Rand Miller. And future ports of the game have been handled by a variety of other developers, including Sunsoft. And ultimately, this was published by Borderbund, who also published the Carmen Sandiego games in the early 90s.
Yep. Tom, you also forgot the 3DO, the iOS, Android. It's available on the Switch right now. Like, you can get this game anywhere, anywhere, anyhow, any place. You can play it on the go. You can play it standing still. You can play it in virtual reality.
You could probably play it on a Samsung fridge, you know?
I mean, just it's possible.
Flicking through, talking to Cirrus and Arcanon on your fridge. Well, this is the original Firewatch, Josh. This is the original Gone Home.
The original Witness.
I did not even really click in my brain until I played it for this episode But I never even thought to consider that this could be called a walking simulator, just from my memories of it. What about you? Did that shock you?
I was watching some videos and watching some history stuff about the game, and a lot of people refer to it as walking simulators, and they, like, that's why a lot of people panned this game when it originally came out, because it's like, oh, this isn't like the LucasArts point-and-click adventures. This is completely different. This is just, it's boring. You're just walking around, and I'm like, I don't know. There's a lot here. There's a lot more, and... Mm-hmm. The puzzles seem normal and realistic for this world rather than tie a, you know, shoelace around a stick of gum and then float it over a sewer drain so you can have somebody unlock a key to it. And it's like, no, like, no, this is like flip the switch, type in the code, you're good to go. Like,
so which Monkey Island puzzle was that, Josh?
Yeah, exactly. I was actually talking about King's Quest.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, Josh, I do have to ask, what was your first experience with this game? You didn't own a Mac growing up, did you?
I didn't own a Mac. No, it was probably around 94, 95. We had a PC in our house. Mm-hmm. I know. Hold up. What? Yeah, we had a personal computer in our home. And I remember getting this game, and I remember just sitting there and just being mesmerized by it because, like, it was so different than anything that I've seen. You know, it looked somewhat realistic. It was so different. Like, the only game that I ever could compare it to at the time was Shadowgate for the original NES. And I remember, like, sitting there and playing the game and having the journal and writing down the notes and stuff like that from the journal, because if you bought the big box version of this game, it came with a missed journal where you could go ahead and fill out all the codes. And then there were some things inside there. It was like, don't go here, don't do this, like, call this number if you really get stuck. And it's like, oh man, there's so much fun stuff, because, like, this was almost like an event when this game came out, because it was like, oh, did you remember, did you do this puzzle, did you talk about this, did you go here, what pages were you grabbing and stuff. Like, there's so much, and it was crazy because I was like, what, 6, 7 at the time, and I was in awe with this, and I loved it. And going back to it, I was it was like riding a bicycle, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like everything just felt like it just all clicked again. What about you, Tom? What's been your experience with this? Because I've talked about Myst a lot, you know, in our personal life, but I don't know. Never really.
Well, yeah. So let me elaborate. I might have told this story on the podcast before, but when I grew up, I did not have a PC for the longest time. And then when my family got one, my dad famously said, you're not allowed to have video games on here. I did not just spend $1,200 for you to have another PlayStation. This is just for homework. And it eventually stopped being for homework. It started being for downloading MP3s illegally. And funnily enough, despite the fact that he bought this computer, I guess he just wasn't aware that he also bought, like, a bundle of software that came with it where Myst was included. So I was playing a game like day one on this thing. And it was kind of funny because it also came with, like, this educational game. So I remember, like, lying a lot and being like, this is like a geography game. See, you go to different places and you read books in the game, and they bought it. So
nice.
There's a lot of book reading, but I cannot say I got very far as a kid. Like, maybe I'm gonna make myself sound stupid, but it's just like a lot of this game just went over my head as a kid walking around. I just remember it was cool. Like, even though I wasn't progressing the game, I was just like, that's neat, this is interesting, the soundtrack and the sounds. Like, when I sat down to do this for the show, and you get that initial, like, noise, like when you enter an age for the first time, like, I got, like, weird, like, muscle memory, you know, like, ooh, yeah, like, I remember this, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a game that leaves an impression, I think, even if you only fleetingly interact with it.
And if you guys know, you know, if you watch our video over on youtube.com/castedpass, where you can actually catch this episode as well, we did a series of Animal Crossing island tours, and the island that I have is named Myst off of this game. Like, I don't know. This game's just, it's always stuck with me. You know, I have it for the DS. I have it for the DS right now. Mm-hmm. And I have it, of course, for PC and Switch. And I have multiple copies of this game because it is fun. It is great. It is just one of those things to go back to just to relive.
Now, Josh, how much do you know about the development of Myst?
Not super much. I always like to leave that up to you because it's like it's like you're teaching me something now.
All right. Well, let me put on my teacher cap and glasses. And students, today we're going to learn about the Miller brothers. Rand and Robin Miller were a pair of brothers who just kind of, you know, one day, literally like out of the blue, were like, let's just start making video game software. And they did. Like, I believe it was Rand or Robin, like, recalled in a Myst anniversary article. It was like, yeah, my brother called me. It was just like, do you want to start making computer games? He was like, okay. So they made a series of games, and they were primarily aimed at children, but they decided they wanted to get into more, you know, like, adult-focused, mature content, high-minded stuff, you know. And their games had always had a focus on exploration over narrative. All their games previously, they had been non-linear, open-ended, and the impact was by player choice more than, like, set goals. And I got a lot of great info from a really cool interview that journalist Emily Yoshida did with the brothers for Grantland in 2013 for the game's 20th anniversary, right? So, Josh, if you were to start developing a game, I'm sure you'd probably think of, like, well, who's my target audience, right? You know, like, what kind of gamer do I want to make this game
right
for, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the Millers were like, no. They were strictly like, what is the kind of game that we would want to play? And they were big fans of, like, deep world-building, like, heavy lore-based stuff. And I'm sure you can obviously notice that from the insane, like, histories and family dynamics of this game. So the backstory and lore of Myst that the Millers developed would famously go on to fill three companion novels and then even like multiple sequels. And the game itself, as you mentioned, comes with a physical journal with some extra notes. And they just loved that stuff. And they admitted in this article I mentioned on Grantland, they're not typical gamers. They said they weren't sure who they were trying to make this for. And every decision was just what they wanted. And I have this quote here. We weren't even going to have the ability to save the game built in, just because we really strongly felt that anything that felt like a video game was going to pull you out of the universe. There originally was going to be no music in this. There originally was going to be like so many non-typical expected things of video games, because they were just like, we just want to put you in an experience and let you live out that universe. So it's kind of shocking how much more different Myst could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see, like, just from what you said, though, like, how much has been added to the game, right? And It is one of those things, like, it was a borderline, like, is it a game? Do you know what I mean? Like, like we said, like, that was it's one of the original walking simulators.
Yeah, the only motivation is just the player's interest in learning more. There's no threats, there's no physical attacks, there's no game over. The only time this game ends is when you shut it off.
Yeah.
So Josh, what's kind of the story of Myst? What are we getting into if you play this game?
So the player assumes the role of just, I guess, you. You find a book and you open it up and you flip to the last page and you get sucked into this world.
Mm-hmm. This and TV book that this universe is littered with.
And as you get sucked into the world, you arrive at the island. And from there, you kind of find your way around and you find a kind of like a library type place that has two books. And inside those books, there are two characters, two brothers. And these brothers have been locked in there. They have been imprisoned into these books. And it is
grounded via book.
And they send you on a quest to find all the missing pages for their book so they can finally get out of the book. Uh-huh. They're saying that they Absolutely. Were wrongfully imprisoned and whatnot. And you can see the two brothers. Do you remember what their names were? Because they were weird
yes.
names.
Cirrus and Aknar.
All right. One of them was like a little bit more normal than the other one. Yeah. One was like he had very violent tendencies and it was like, I don't know if I want to let this one out.
Cirrus is basically Loki, and Aknar is the Joker, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, Aknar is always like, oh, yeah, free me. Nothing wrong with me. And Cirrus is like, you should free me. Good things will happen, I promise. You know, like, very obvious heels, but in different ways.
And you get to choose what pages that you want to get, which was awesome because it made you come back for more. It made you play the game again to see, you know, once you get all the pages, what happens. And then you go through and now you get the other pages then for the other brother and see where what happens with that one. Like, and both of the endings are pretty much the same.
Right, those are both the brother endings, but there are a couple other endings in this game, and it's influenced by how you may interact with the third big player in this little drama, and that is Atrus.
What are you talking about? You said that they said that there was you shouldn't touch the other book.
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't touch the other book right off the bat. I actually wanted to mention, you know, so you can also, at the early onset of this game, if you're observant, and I'm not saying, like, anything against any player, but there's a way where you can meet a mysterious man in like a weird kind of water portal. He has a message for Catherine, and he talks quite dramatically. You know, when you find the code to unlock his message, his message, he gives it to you with great importance, as if to say that the fate of the world, his world, rests in this quest. Yeah, that again, as Atrus, who we come to find out is the father of Cirrus and Aknar, the one who put them in the books. And as you referenced, Josh, in your quest to free one of the brothers, you can come across a third book, which Atrus himself is trapped in. And then there's another possible outcome. Are you going to free Atrus? Are you going to free one of the brothers? You can do whatever you want. And like you said, it encourages the replay value.
So when I played through, because one thing about this game is you can beat this game in like 4 minutes. And I remembered the code. I remembered how to do it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it's one of those things that's just etched in my brain. Like, that I will always remember how to do it. Like when I play through like the original Resident Evil games and I know all the computer codes because I've just played that game so many times that I can just go through and do the little sand puzzle thing on the wall, like in the cement thing, unlock the book, go out, flip up the right switches in the right order, grab the page, go back in, get it done, over. That's the true ending. That's really the only like main ending to the game. The other two are just like kind of side ones because the brothers, depending on which brother you let out, both results in the same thing, is they end up trapping you inside the book.
Yeah, basically. It's a big trick. And then Atrus, you can have an ending where you think you're about to free Atrus, but you've actually trapped yourself in the book with him because you didn't follow his instructions. Or the ultimate, as you said, true ending is you properly free Atrus so that he can go and deal with his sons once and for all. And that final ending kind of implies that he murders his own sons.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when you go back into the world and you look, both books are missing and there's just giant burn marks where the books were. Like, he just blew the books up.
Yeah. A little bit of infanticide, you know, killing of children in this. They're adults. They're grown ass men. But, you know, he still kills his own kids. And that's also the funny thing, Josh, is like, so the reward for the end of your quest is just that you're free to come and go amongst Atrus's worlds as you please. He's just like, you know, you can do whatever you want. That's my gift to you. But yeah, like, you come back into Myst if you're playing the original save file. You're just walking around and that's it. Like, there's nothing else to do except explore.
Mm-hmm.
So Josh, what did you think of the overall exploration aspect of Myst? I don't think we elaborated on, but just to explain, you know, you have the central hub island with Atrus's library in the center, and his library contained these books. And as you solve puzzles, you can use these books to dive into other worlds called ages. And there's 4 ages in the game. They've all got varying kinds of themes and geography. And this game and the rest of the Myst franchise is all about like the magic books that take you to different ages and things like that.
Yeah.
What did you think of all of that, Josh?
I thought Like, the first time I figured out that I could leave the island, it blew my mind. Because I always thought that just the game itself was the island, right? And they always talked the island of mist, the island of mist. But they never told you that you were going other places, right? They never told you you were going underground. They never told you you were doing all kinds of weird crap. They never told you that the rocket ship only had a piano inside of it.
Big bait and switch. It's like, oh my God, am I going to the moon? Oh.
I'm going to play Rocket Man. But yeah, I mean, it's just, there was so much to do in this game. And if you're not like a puzzle person, and you didn't know like what to be looking out for and how to like put all the pieces together, like you could be lost in this world for hours, if not days, if not weeks, if not months, trying to figure out how the hell to play this game and what you need to do inside this game. And I love that because it's a game that you can just go in and get lost in this world.
Well, I think is really interesting. So obviously at the time they didn't have the big beefy computer rigs that we have nowadays. And on paper, Myst sounds like a huge game. So the whole concept of the ages of the bridging worlds hid within books, that was basically a design choice to compartmentalize the game world. It's like, oh, we can't fit the whole game on most computers, but like if we basically just like have a world and all the other worlds are in tiny boxes until you open the books, and then like that was all just like a big choice. And I think it's pretty creative way to get over the hurdles of the time. And I think it speaks a lot to how Myst was probably able to be ported to so many places, not just like obviously as technology advanced, but it had already just like this, you know, great approach to packing a lot of content into a tiny package.
Well, one thing that led to that being possible is this is one of the first CD-ROM games,
mm-hmm.
which is insane. The thing is, before that, everything was on cardboard.
You know, isn't it really interesting, Josh, that the floppy disk is still kind of like the universal save icon, like the picture? And I'm pretty sure that like we might be the last generation to have ever used a floppy disk. Like Gen Z and Alpha kids might just be like, that's just the save icon if they saw it in person.
I know. I have a giant collection of floppy disk games that I picked up the one time. And like I have the original Mortal Kombat on floppy disk. Like,
that's crazy that it fits on there. Oh my gosh.
I know. But like I won't ever get rid of them because it's history now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of history, Josh, can we talk about how much of a mainstream hit Myst actually was?
Do you know how you can tell that you are a mainstream hit, Tom?
How?
When you arrive on The Simpsons. There was an episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes into like the virtual world, where he has like a 3D animated version of himself and he's walking around like this like cyber cyber world thing, and he looks over and the Colosseum thing where the library is in the episode. He looks over and looks at it and it's just sitting there and it's like, oh my God, like, you know, you made it.
Yeah, I believe that's a Treehouse of Horror episode because I have seen that one. That's awesome. That's amazing. My recommendation for the same joke you were making, you know how you know you've made it?
How?
When you're so popular that a parody game can be created called Pyst, P-Y-S-T, starring John Goodman, one of our all-time boys here between the two of us. So that's when you know you've made it. But for real. So as Josh mentioned, this revolutionized CD-ROM-based games. Computers started getting CD-ROMs put into them basically for this freaking game. Sold 200,000 units within its first 6 months when it was still just on Mac units alone. Then in March 94, so 8 months after release, boom, it's on Windows. By spring 1995, it gets up to 1 million units sold, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you know which game defeated Myst for the title of highest selling computer game?
Yes, I do. That is The Sims.
Mm-hmm.
Which so was, it decade, was, yeah, I would say it's 6 years later.
So for over half a decade, Myst was the reigning champ. You know, I mentioned companion novels earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So the first of the Myst companion novels was so popular, it made it onto the New York Times bestseller list. Like, can you imagine a Halo book? I'm not pooping on Halo books or anything. I'm just saying those are very, you know, like niche, basically for fans only. Like, can you imagine like the Reach novel making it to the New York Times, like top 10?
Do you know
if Reach did, but you know, I'm just saying.
It didn't. No, it didn't. I have, okay. I have Reach right back.
Okay.
Right there. Do you know what sucks?
What the?
So do you remember when we were on stream a couple months ago and I said how I got the Metal Gear Solid book at the Scholastic Book Fair?
Yeah, you did.
Guess what book I got at the Scholastic Book Fair one year?
One of the missed companion books?
I got the first one and I lost it. I lost it throughout the years and it makes me so mad because I was like, oh, I want to go back and read it and see like how good it actually is. Like,
very sorry for that.
Yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, it sucks.
Well, speaking of expanding the Myst universe, Josh, have you ever played Riven, the sequel to Myst?
I never played any of the sequels, which is like crazy because how much I love this game. I think this, like, I just didn't need to go through and continue in the world. But I own it, and I hear it's great. It's not as good, but it's still like they just upgraded and they, you know, made some graphical choices that are better for everybody.
Mm-hmm. What about Uru or any of the other? Because Myst continued. Myst had a third and a fourth mainline
there
title.
There was six. I think there were six sequels. Oh, five sequels technically to the game.
There
six
are
games.
Overall,
yeah.
There are. And then most notably, there was Myst Online, Uru Live, which was a planned MMO that was going to be this big freaking thing. Cyan Worlds put millions of dollars into that, and then they hit a point in development where they were like, this isn't feasible as an MMO, just released as a single player game, and it bombed so hard that Cyan almost went out of business.
Whew.
Yeah, but nowadays they basically, their bread and butter is just Myst ports, you know, they are ports of their real classic games from pre-Myst. That they're just a Myst factory, and it's kind of shocking, you know. You think, I don't know, I don't want to call it beating a horse to death, but like, you think they have any other ideas? I don't know.
I mean, if you make one game that's just so good, you know what I mean? Like, somebody out there has never played it, you know what I mean? Like, and there's people,
sure,
there's people out there who are just discovering new games or old games all the time. And now the fact that you can go through and you can get real Myst, which kind of gets rid of a lot of the point and click side of things where you can just kind of walk around the world, it adds a little bit more of a modern day twist to the game for people who are, oh, this is a baby's game or this is an old person's game, the point and click stuff, like, this is stupid, I don't need that.
So Josh, I want to ask you a question based off what you just said. Now there's what's called real Myst. Why is that called real Myst?
So, Real Myst was created, I believe, in the Unreal Engine.
Oh, so that's what it refers to.
Yeah. Like, okay. It's an up-resed version of it, like, to make it look as clean, as polished as possible. Like, I know that the Masterpiece Edition, which is the version that I played, is the original game. That was the 20th anniversary version of the game, or 20th or 25th, somewhere around there. But yeah, The real Myst version is, I think it's done in Unreal Engine.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, but I honestly thought for a second you were going to set me up for a segue into something I wanted to talk about. So, I'm sure you remember when the Ghostbusters cartoon had to be called The Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And that's because there was this famous example of there was another thing, another show called Ghostbusters, so that's what they put real on it to differentiate. And when Myst came out and was a huge hit, there was apparently a flood of what were called Myst clones. Just real low-effort adventure games that flooded the gaming market. And, you know, in a lot of people's opinion, it's the combination of, like, Myst's success and then the glut of clones, of shovelware clones, that kind of might have ruined the adventure game genre, especially on PCs.
I think it was just a lot of people who were bitter because they didn't get success. You know what I mean? They didn't catch the lightning in the bottle.
Yeah, I think what the kind of people with the negative point of view are probably just focusing on is the fact that Myst was, in some cases, you could argue, the last big exploration adventure game for a long time. Because then you had Doom and Unreal, and they kind of took over the PC world. It was mostly shooter based. Then consoles just went full blown into 3D adventure, as we said, adventure platformers. It wasn't until we get the quote unquote walking simulators, which I still kind of feel is a bad. It's kind of a like an insulting name for what those games try to be. It's not great. But you have games like Gone Home, like Firewatch, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, and as you mentioned, The Witness, which have, I think they represent a rebirth of what Myst was trying to do.
Listen, if there's ever any game that recaptures the mystery, the excitement, the craziness of what Myst was, it is The Witness. The Witness is hands down like this generation's version of Myst. So at the end of the day, Tom, would you recommend someone play Myst?
Yeah, I think Myst is pretty fascinating as a historical object. And like you said, it does not have a very high like time commitment to it. And with the internet nowadays, like, you don't got to call a number in a journal, which I'm sure they charged you for. You can just, if you get stuck, just look up the puzzles. God knows I did. And just check it out. It's a curio. It's a historical curio that I think is worth looking into if you want to kind of get an appreciation for PC gaming and how far it's come. How about you, Josh?
If you grew up with Myst, you will know how much of a great game this is. Playing it now, and I understand the attention span to a lot of people who play games, they would not last long in this world because it doesn't hold your hand. It doesn't explain anything. It doesn't do any of that kind of stuff. Play the game for just the first island. Figure out the puzzles yourself. Figure out how the world works, how everything, like how it clicks. And if you like it and you enjoy it and you feel a sense of accomplishment, continue going. If not, you won't get any more from it. I think it is a great game. I think it is a wonderful game. I think you should at least try it because it is a time capsule of PC's past. And you can get it on everything. Listen, download it on your iPhone. It's probably like $2.
There you go. Just like your grandpa had to play it on a Mac, you can play it on your iPhone.
There, look at that. Generational gaps.
Yep, the Apple circle of life.
There you have it. That is our take on the 1993 hit classic Myst.
Our take. Yes, I would agree that it's quite a strong opinion, a statement of search, virtuous fact, objectively deployed by the two of us that I don't see how anyone could argue with our point of view. My point of view. This joke only gets funnier, right, Josh?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to do to sign off?
Oh, sure. Well, I was just going to mention that.
I thought you were going to do it in the same way.
Oh, if you enjoyed this content, my content, please be sure to like, rate, and subscribe, and come back for more great Cast the Past action. Oh, and destroy this after you've listened to it. Best no one finds it.
And until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom, my Tom.
And we'll see you in the future.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry.
While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. The show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.